are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Pacers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we are proudly presented today by SeatGeek and their fantastic SeatGeek app for your smartphone, which makes it easy to buy tickets to join the fray at the Fieldhouse or catch the Pacers on the road. My name is Tom Lewis of IndyCornrows.com, and today's episode, we will look back at the Pacers' convincing win over the Chicago Bulls on Saturday and hear from Paul George on the defensive improvement he saw. And I'll also hit on PG's first career ejection, an odd one at that, in the third quarter. After that, we will look ahead to the Charlotte Hornets Monday night's opponent on the road and see if the Pacers can take that great effort outside of the Fieldhouse and get their first road win. So don't forget, you can hit me up with any comments or questions via email at indycornrows@gmail.com. Also, shoot me a note at Twitter on at indycornrows. So the coaches and players both use the phrase quite often before and after the win on Saturday that the tape don't lie. And they were referring to a Friday film session where they were forced to digest all of the ugliness that ensued up in Milwaukee on Thursday as the Bucks ran all over and actually dunked all over the Pacers with defensive breakdowns from all angles to analyze and expose. And as CJ Miles put it after the game, looking at that tape's like looking in the mirror. You can't hide. And you're right there in front of everybody getting your mistakes pointed out. And it served as a great teaching tool, apparently, because the team was far more tied together on the defensive end, and that seemed to help on the offensive end as well. Another thing we note from the 111-94 win at the Fieldhouse on Saturday is that the Pacers took the fast-paced game down a notch a little bit. Nate McMillan wants the team to obviously get the ball and run and transition. If they get an easy transition bucket to take it, but he doesn't want them getting down there and forcing up shots just to get a shot up quick and keep the pace going. He wants them to take good shots within the offense. If that doesn't happen, those bad quick shots have led to a lot of bad transition sequences that have the Pacers' defense out of shape and out of position and getting run all over. So trying to manage that pace and the offense went much better against the Bulls. And Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis both played a big role in that, playing different types of games, but equally impacting the game. And Teague in particular was able to get some buckets early, and he even made 3 3-pointers eventually, and kind of just played a normal Jeff Teague-type game that you would expect. Monte Ellis didn't take a lot of shots. In fact, he only took 2. But he played a lot of point guard, facilitated quite well, had 8 assists. So a couple of areas, aside from the scoreboard, where improvement was evident was on the ball defense with Teagan Monte. And, you know, simply communicating a lot better, calling out screens and being boisterous about it and active. You know, you could tell they were calling out screens, which helps everybody anticipate what's going on a lot better, be more engaged. I know at one point CJ Miles was, you know, clapping his fingers and thumb together, you know, imploring his teammates to talk to him, let him know when the screen was coming, and call out the screens and different defensive reads. And, you know, those seem like such basic things that you're teaching down to junior high level or below, but even NBA players, you know, have to maintain those fundamentals of team play. And the Pacers were able to get back down to the root of some of their problems, and part of that was communication, so to go along with effort. So Miles Turner also was noticeably better on the defensive end. You know, yes, he had four blocks, but his defense has really struggled when he's not swatting a shot. And that's where the Pacers really need some improvement with him on the ground in the post playing defense. And against Chicago, he was much more sound. And he even talked about that communication really helping him out. He's also barking out, but he's hearing back and knowing what to do. And I think, you know, especially for a young guy, when you're hearing that type of communication, it just gives you confidence. You know, okay, I'm in the right spot, I'm doing the right thing, I'm covered up, and then he can let that natural ability kick in, as opposed to maybe, you know, thinking a little bit too much and thinking and losing a tick of a second, which can make him too late and create a foul. So I also noticed that a little bit more patience with Turner on the offensive end as well in the post. He still doesn't have a bevy of post moves to go to and can get tangled up a little bit, but he was a little more patient and did draw a few trips to the foul line, which was great for him to, you know, give an impact and get back into that double-digit scoring range. So, as I mentioned, both Nate McMillan and Paul George talked about the defensive improvement and the weak side help being something that kept that thing tied together and helped them defend the pick and rolls better and make life a little more difficult around the rim for the Bulls as compared to the Bucks. And here's a clip of Paul George talking about what he liked from the defense on Saturday night. Paul, you've been, you know, frustrated and critical of the defense. What did you see tonight that you liked, and what were the areas of improvement?
I thought, we were just great on our weak side help. I thought they didn't get, you know, any easy looks in the perimeter. You take our last game against Milwaukee where they had, you know, almost 40 points off dunks. You know, tonight we didn't allow, good looks. I thought everything was contested and everything was tough in the paint.
So that was Paul George after the game. I also spoke with Monte Ellis, who can be quite short with comments with the media, and it seems like more so after a good game than a poor game. Yeah, I think he's actually better to talk to after a bad game. Maybe he just doesn't like to talk himself up, but he had a strong impact on the game. Again, only took two shots while still leading the team in minutes, but he had 8 assists and 7 rebounds. And I looked up Monte's history because he's always been known as a shot maker and definitely a shot taker. And this was the first time he'd ever played over 20 minutes in a game, and he played 32 minutes, but this was the first time he played over 20 minutes and only taken two shots. He's only taken that few shots 16 times in his career prior, but those were all games where he played less than 20 minutes. So that was a different style of game for Monte for sure, but it was impactful on the win and did what needed to be done. So that was interesting to see how that played out. And Jeff Teague also played well. The combo of guards has been kind of a mismatch that has appeared on the court through the first 5 games, but they made it work against the Bulls. And Teague, you know, had 21 points and on only 14 shots and 6 assists. Even made 3 of 5 3-pointers. So all around, the type of decent, good Jeff Teague game we would want to expect after he came over from Atlanta. So another note off the bench, C.J. Miles continued his strong play, made 4 of 7 threes, and, you know, he's the third leading scorer on the team now, 14.5 points per game off the bench, and since sitting out throughout camp and starting to get his legs under him the last few games, he's been real consistent and a huge boost. Between he and Aaron Brooks off the bench, that reserve unit is running much better. And I think if they can slow down a little bit and get Jefferson some more touches, you know, he did have a bigger impact on the offensive end, because he can pass so well out of the post, even when he's not hitting a shot. So that reserve unit is starting to come around a little bit. And if the Pacers can get all these parts moving together at the same time, They might be able to get something rolling here as the schedule looks to get tougher in a couple of weeks. This week, Pacers play the Hornets Monday night. Then they have a home-and-home with the Philadelphia 76ers with the Sixers at the Fieldhouse on Wednesday. So if you want to catch the Pacers, make sure to use the SeatGeek app for tickets, because the NBA season is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, club seats, or the upper level. Now, I have the SeatGeek app, and as you know, it's easy to pop open the app, check the seats, look for those green dots, which are usually the best values, whether in the upper deck or down in the lower level. Because with SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket, because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced tickets and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. And best of all for my listeners, you can get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. To get the $20 rebate, just download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code LOPACERS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOPACERS today. Okay, so one quick NBA note of interest. Heard this evening, Sunday evening, as we taped this for Monday morning. Last night, Lance Stephenson had a groin injury and was reported that it will require surgery, and he was out indefinitely for the New Orleans Pelicans. And Stephenson was off to a pretty good start, although the Pelicans have yet to win a game. But today, the Pelicans waived Lance to sign Archie Goodwin. So Lance's long, strange trip through the NBA continues. And the move, you know, kind of seems harsh by New Orleans, considering, you know, Lance was, you know, fourth in the team in minutes and points. He was scoring about 10 points per game off the bench. But, you know, the Pelicans are trying desperately to win, and their health is not great. They need some bodies. So I'm not sure how long this injury will keep him out, and if it was going to be a real extended period of time, maybe the Pelicans decided, you know, they couldn't wait on Lance to get healthy. So regardless of the situation, this is a tough break for Lance, and all you have to do now is wonder where he'll wind up next, because no doubt he'll keep pushing away and working to get back in the league, and someone will give him a chance for sure. So also want to note Paul George had his first ejection from an NBA game against Chicago, and it happened quick and caught everybody by surprise, because it didn't seem like much had happened, but the end result was Paul George kicked the ball into the crowd. It hit a woman in the face, and doing so is an ejection by the NBA's rules. I wasn't aware that it was just so cut and dry, but that's how the referees interpreted it. So PG was gone late in the third quarter. Fortunately, the Pacers had a big lead and were able to hold on. But essentially how Paul explained it was, the ball was kind of bouncing around, and he was frustrated by a call and kind of tried to kick the ball against the basket stanchion, and he missed it wide right. So the ball went up into the crowd and caught a woman in the face. Now, it wasn't a paying fan, quote unquote. This woman was someone who worked for Fox Sports Indiana television broadcast, and she was sitting in a seat next to someone she knew and took it in the face. But you know, it doesn't matter who the person is. It was the act of PG kicking the ball that caused him to get ejected. He immediately went up, apologized. She was fine, no problem. But PG basically mentioned that his soccer skills aren't as good as he thought they were. So he will be, no doubt, a little lighter in the wallet, expecting a fine, which he said he expects as well. I can't imagine he'd get suspended for a game based on that, just because hopefully they would take intent into the situation. And, it wasn't like he was doing a Chuck Person booted up into the upper deck effort. He just kind of kicked it lightly and it went awry. So, anyways, he was definitely subdued after the game and upset with himself for the situation, but also happy that it didn't cost the team the game after they were playing so well. So it's on to Charlotte, and the Hornets are a team that has off to a great start, 4-1 so far, and obviously they have a few different faces playing this year. Roy Hibbert, for one, is in Charlotte, but he has hurt his knee in the first game, only played the first two games. We all know Cody Zeller. Obviously, Al Jefferson is missing, so he won't be killing the Pacers in Charlotte as he has the past couple of years. Hopefully, he'll be doing some damage to the Hornet. So, I checked in with Doug Branson of Locked On Hornets podcast. Great show. A lot of good information. Check out his whole show leading up to the Pacers game. It will give you some great information, but he was kind enough to provide us with a preview of the Hornets and their start to the season. So here's Doug.
The Hornets are heading back home after a 99-95 win over the Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn. The Hornets off to a 4-1 start to the season, their best start since the 2000 and 2001 season. That's a long time. It's hinged on a few factors. Number one, great defensive play. The Hornets are ranked third in the league in defensive rating at 94.1. A lot of that you'd have to pin on the return of starting small forward Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Second, Kemba Walker is not letting up on offense despite others around him shooting poorly to begin the season. He's averaging 24.4 points per game on 42% shooting from three with 7 free throw attempts a game. He's doing it inside and out. And finally, the Hornets have had a pretty weak schedule to open things up. I think that's fair. You have to look at that. And now they go face Indiana, and then they'll have Toronto and Cleveland coming up as well. So they will certainly be tested. Despite the easy slate of opponents, the Hornets are struggling to get off to good starts. They've faced double-digit first-half deficits in nearly all of their games this season, but they've been able to get things figured out in the locker room. In third quarters this year, they're averaging over 30.8 points on 54% shooting and outscoring opponents by 8. So if you're looking for a X factor in this game, it could be third quarter offense for the Hornets. On the injury front, Roy Hibbert is still nursing a knee injury suffered in game 1, and Jeremy Lamb still recovering from a hamstring strain. Both are out of Monday's contest. Marvin Williams, who hit 2 big threes at the end of Friday's win over Brooklyn, has an illness that has him listed as questionable. If he isn't able to go, expect Frank Kaminsky to get the start in his place. The Hornets are sharing the ball. They're not turning it over and getting back to the volume of three-point shots they shot last season. If they start going down for players outside of Kemba and Nick Batum, this can be a very explosive offense to go along with a great defense. If not, well, unfortunately, they don't have Al Jefferson to throw it into anymore. He plays for the Pacers. From Charlotte, Doug Branson, Locked On Hornets.
So thanks again to Doug Branson from Locked On Hornets. Make sure you check out his podcast, as it has a great preview for the Hornets and Pacers. And as he mentioned, Kemba Walker is leading the way for the Hornets. He's scoring over 24 points a game and no doubt will be drooling over the matchup with the Pacers if he's been looking at the tape of their other road games when they have struggled to defend the point guard. With Roy Hibbert out, unfortunately, we won't see Big Roy other than on the bench, likely in some natty attire. But former Washington Hatchet, Mr. Basketball, IU Hoosier, Cody Zeller is slid into the starting lineup and is doing pretty well for the Hornets. He's doing very well on the financial end, just signing a 4-year contract extension worth about $56 million. So that is a gives him some stability there in Charlotte and more room to grow as he continues to develop his NBA game. And that big salary will no doubt help the old Hatchet House at some point add some bells and whistles to that iconic gym in Indiana. So Charlotte, as a whole, has not been a friendly road game for the Pacers over the past few years. So after working over, you know, the worn-out Bulls team on the back-to-back on Saturday, we'll see if the Pacers can pass a big road test against the Hornets. Now, before we go, again, big thanks to SeatGeek. Remember to download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LOPACERS for a $20 rebate on your first ticket purchase. Also, thanks again for listening. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Pacers, so hit me up via email at indycornrows@gmail.com or on Twitter at indycornrows. And don't forget, you can find the podcast on audioboom.com. Also, subscribe to the pod on iTunes and on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and Google Play, where all prior episodes are available, so check them out. Okay, that's a wrap for today. You've been listening to Locked On Pacers on the Locked On Podcast Network. You got it.